You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. As always, I'll be your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yes, Scott, this will be episode 4. It's like a Chevy. It's 454.
Woo!
All right, Woo is right. And, you know,
it's still doing some... I saw an El Camino today downtown, and it was a... probably a 78 or later El Camino.
Okay.
And it had an aftermarket hood scoop on it, but it was like the Chevy SS hood scoop, you know, where the vent is at the back and okay. Not the front.
Yeah.
And on it there was a 454 badge.
Oh, that's cool.
And it sounded like it had a four, but it was metallic lime, metallic green. Not quite bright green, but kind of like a foresty green.
Yeah.
Probably about the color of these chairs actually.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anyway, I thought you'd appreciate that.
I would. Yeah.
It sounded pretty bad.
Well, we didn't record the last couple weeks. We've had other things going on, but I did attend New York Comic Con. I was going to tell you.
Tell me all about it, Dave.
A little bit about New York Comic Con. Well, first of all, I decided probably back in April or May I was. Plan on going to the show. I got the tickets, got the hotel, got the airfare, blah blah blah. As you would do if you're going to go to a show, you get the tickets first,
right?
Then that's, you worry about
that's usually the hardest part.
Yeah, then you worry about a hotel, then you and the airfare you can kind of get. So anyway, so had all that figured out, and the plan was to stay in Manhattan the whole time. Found this hotel that was going to work out, and
cool.
And this hotel had 2 king size beds in it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a rarity in New York City.
That is a rarity. Michelle and I have stayed at some weird, large hotel rooms just in odd places. But
it's rare to have 2 kings in one room. It's usually king and sofa or 2 queens or 2 fools or whatever. Why that was kind of important is because my wife and my son was gonna meet me there, so we wanted to have the bed situation. I mean, it could have been a king and a fool or whatever. That's kind of irrelevant, but. It was in a good location, had the bed set up, was going to be great, blah, blah, blah. I didn't tell you this, but about a week and a half or so before our trip, I called to that hotel, and I just wanted to verify my, you know, reservations are still good.
Yeah.
Wanted to verify the 2 bed situation was still good. And the desk guy goes, yeah, we've got your reservation, but here's the thing.
There's no thing.
We're not going to be able to accommodate that because... we're going to be shutting down this hotel for maintenance. And I was like, what?
He goes, dude, yeah. Are you kidding me?
He goes, yeah. Pretty quick, like, we're gonna send out some emails and let everybody know. But
this is a week before your vacation?
About a week and a half before we get to New York City.
Dude,
and he's like,
I did.
Whatever you're going to say, trust me, I did. yeah, so he's like, yeah, you're gonna get some notification, but we're not gonna be able to accommodate anybody's stay here, but we've got another hotel across the street and we're gonna transfer people over there, so don't worry just yet or whatever. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So I call up and I go through booking, I call up booking and I'm like, hey, have you heard this? And they're like, no, we haven't heard this. And they go, let us put you on hold, we'll reach out to them. Well, they didn't get a hold of them, blah blah blah. And this went on a couple of days, like they never got, couldn't get any more information. So then I called the hotel directly a couple of different days in a row before I could finally get through to somebody again.
So meanwhile, the clock is ticking on you going
up
there.
I'm down probably inside of a week now.
Dude.
It was getting down to right about a week, and so finally I got a hold of somebody at the hotel, and they go, yeah, we do have a hotel across the street. And they go, let's see if we've got any spots over there. And I go, I didn't get transferred. They go, no, that hotel is much smaller, and it's probably already full. So sure enough, the lady looks and goes, oh, yeah, all those rooms are booked. The time you're going to be here, for the week you're going to be here. Because I had that room for like 7 days.
Right.
Like, there's no, she goes, we can't accommodate that. She goes, we do have another hotel, though. And now this, the second one was across the street. The third one is like way far north. Might have been way far south, but either way,
big difference.
It was a long, it was quite a ways away,
okay.
And that wasn't going to work. And then she said, "Oh, that was full anyway. Whatever, whatever." So now I'm like, "Well, this isn't happening." So Meanwhile, booking does get some information from them that, yeah, they're having what they call an emergency shutdown at this hotel.
What happened?
No one knew what happened, and no one could tell me. I talked to...
Did you go by there? I would have went by there just to see what was going on.
Well, I was very furious. I was going to go by there, but after what happened worked out, I just blew it off. Because,
I gotcha.
Because booking said, we will find you a hotel. We're going to find you a hotel as good or better. And I'm like, yeah, but now we're like a week away. The hotel's going to be so much more expensive. They'll go, you'll pay for it, but we'll give you the difference.
Oh, okay.
So,
You have to pay the difference and they reimburse you?
They're going to cancel the original one. I'll set up the new one and pay whatever I got to pay. And then I had to get my receipt and send them my receipt to get my refund, basically.
Okay.
And I went through, I'm telling you, I talked to 3 or 4 agents multiple days in a row till finally they found us a hotel. But here's the thing. The hotel they got us was so much better than the original one. In fact, this hotel they got us, the other one's location was pretty good. It was off of 34th, kind of by the Empire State Building, sort of.
Oh, yeah.
This one, though, was off of 41st. It was...
By Rockefeller Center?
No, south of there.
Oh, okay.
It was about 3 blocks...
Oh, that's the 50th.
3 blocks from
Times Square, or Grand Central.
About 2 blocks from Times Square, about 3 blocks from Midtown, right around the corner from Books Kinokuniya.
Oh, okay.
And about 5 blocks from Bookoff. So it's like right in the center of all that stuff.
Oh,
and it was like a super nice hotel. And so, got the hotel. Everybody at the hotel was awesome. I mean, the hotel was great. One of the better hotels I've stayed in, especially in New York City. And then sure enough, after I checked out, I got the copy of the ticket. And then I sent it to Booking, and then Booking has already sent me a refund for the difference.
Oh, cool.
Which I'm glad they did, because, let me tell you, that hotel, that last minute, where it was located...
For was about $400 bucks a night?
Oh, more than that.
Oh, yeah.
This the bill was like the price of a really nice used car.
I gotcha.
It was really...
You got 7 days.
It was a big, big hotel bill. But I did get reimbursed the difference of what it would have been. So, so that whole thing was like very like up in the air. I kept telling people booking, you realize I want to be in New York City in 1 week.
Right.
God. And then my family's showing up, and we're going to be there for a whole week in 1 week. And they go, oh, no, David, we're going to... They never call me David. Oh, no, David, we're going to fix this for you. We're going to get this going and blah, blah, blah. And to their credit, they did, which was pretty cool. But anyways, that was a big deal.
That's a huge deal.
Yeah. So flew in, direct flight to LaGuardia, took a Uber, and went through the, what's it called? The Queens Tunnel, I think. Queens something tunnel. Really cool. There's a tunnel there.
Yes, I believe that would be the Queens Tunnel, not the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah, the Lincoln's on the other side.
Right.
But anyway, went through the tunnel, got to the hotel room really quickly, dropped off my stuff, hit the Midtown, hit the Books Kinokuniya, hit the Book Off, did all that stuff, had me some pizza on the street, the whole bit, man. And it's kind of misting that day, so it's kind of like get the whole New York effect. The rest of the days there, though, sunny and like not no clouds in the sky, really. So it's like,
oh, that's good. What was the temperature?
Like light jacket, like hoodie weather.
Like 70s.
Well, in the morning it was kind of a little bit cold, but I didn't wear a jacket the first couple of days. And on Saturday you had to kind of wear a hoodie to the show because it was getting a little cool at that point. But,
oh yeah.
So I'm gonna tell you some of the highlights. Let's see here. Okay, so now when you went last in 2019. Had they completed the Javits expansion on the north side of the building?
Yeah, I believe so.
Did you go and look at any of that? You recall looking at any of that? Because let me tell you, it's got 5 levels now. Have you been up on this?
No, I guess I didn't have that done. Because I think last time I went, Artist Alley was in the basement again.
Yeah, it still is.
Oh, it is? Is it the expansion over where they had Artist Alley when it was down that hall?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Okay, I hadn't been, there was definitely not five levels when I was over there.
Yeah, so, like, okay, you know where the dealer's room is, mm-hmm. and it's on, like, the second level, right?
Yeah.
First level's where you enter, and the bottom level, the basement level, is the level that's got the queuing area, it's got the main stage, it's got the Artist Alley, and it's got the photo area. That's all in the basement. Then you enter in the first level. It's got some stuff on it. The second level is pretty much the dealer's room. Well, if you go out of the dealer's room and you're all the way to the north side of the building, you really couldn't go out there. And you had to kind of go out in the middle and go down the escalator or whatever, right? Or on the south side, kind of over there where we used to buy those gyros at. But yeah. Now they've got it to where if you're in the dealer's room, you can go out the north side. And that hooks into this big open atrium area. With these huge escalators that are probably like three-story escalators.
Oh, yeah, kind of like out at San Diego.
Yeah, they go up forever. And that takes you to like the third and fourth level. And then when you go up one more, the fifth level is like this gigantic, think ballroom 20 size room.
It
probably holds 5,000 people or more. It's just humongous. So that's pretty cool. That's all new. You can cut through the area outside where they had the food trucks and all that.
Oh yeah, I don't know what that area is normally, like a drop off area or something.
Yeah, it's probably like a loading dock area or something like that.
Yeah, because it's not street level, it's below street level, but it's got a drive.
Yeah. So down there, here's some things they did, which is pretty cool. They added a lot of food trucks. They added a crap ton of porta potties, and they added like these hand wash stations.
Oh, yeah.
So you could just go out there, you get food, use the restroom, wash your hands, and you can cut through there to go into the expansion site without having to go through all the traffic inside the building.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that was really cool because I did, on Saturday, I did all panels in the expansion site.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what I was going to tell you is if you remember when we were going, if you wanted to do one of the big panels, when you first got there, you had to go down to that one area, in the queuing area, and they gave you a wristband for whatever panel you wanted to go to.
Yeah. Right?
Well, now they get this reservation thing. Have you heard about this?
No, is it online?
It's online. It's a certain day before the show starts. This, whatever day it is, like I think it was like a random Thursday, you get online and you put your...
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah, you put your like...
Because somebody on Facebook that I knew... They had like 10 panels they wanted to go to.
Yeah.
And they went on there and they didn't get on any of them.
Well, that's their fault.
Well, I don't know if it's their fault.
Well, there's some ways you can circumvent that. So, like, it tells you up front, it says, okay.
But you don't automatically get them, do you?
I got everything I wanted except for one thing was sold out when I got there.
Well, that's
they sold out, but
well, yeah, it didn't cost, but it was full when you got there.
But you can still get in. You can still go to that, though.
Oh, I don't know if he did that or not. He was just saying everything he put on there, or maybe it was like he did. He put 10 things on there, and of the 10,
well,
most of them were full already.
They had criteria like if you want to do like main stage or the big panels, you could do I think two a day. If you wanted to do the smaller ones, maybe three. And if you wanted to get in line for some sort of a photo op or something like that, there's special ones that you had to do, like get reservations for.
Right.
Because
they cost. Or like a photo op would cost.
Right? Well, yeah, but there was. I'm pretty sure photo ops were in there too. Not all of them, but some of them. Like the
probably if you bought, you probably get in on
more,
that.
The more popular ones. I got in on it, and I was. At work, I had downtime, so I got to continually keep it going on my phone, and I logged in right away on my phone, but even logging in right away, it was so busy that it took me like about 50 minutes before it was my turn.
Well, I think that was his deal, is that it was so busy that he couldn't
get anything. Yeah, then you got 10 minutes to solidify your what you want, so, but I'd already looked at all of it, I knew what I wanted, so I just went down and checked what I wanted. Only one of them was already full, which is no big deal. I'll get to that in a second. But they do have some good stuff about it because what they did was is they put these panels where they were, I want to say, 15-minute breaks or maybe 30. And they said, oh, yeah, you can't do these two big panels back-to-back because you have they allowed like a 35 minute gap. So if you want to do two big panels back to back, they wouldn't allow it. But here's the thing. They tell you right on there, they say, okay, we're only reserving...
Do you know what they consider big panels when you look at them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's already on there.
So it'll say this is like a red panel or something?
No, well, so all the panels weren't there. It's just the ones you could... Just the reservation ones.
Okay.
So not all the panels of the day were on there. Just the ones they consider...
Oh, so not all the panels were reservation panels.
Right.
So any of these panels you couldn't do back-to-back?
Yeah, because they had like a 35-minute time thing under whatever. And some of that might be traveling, potentially traveling from like the Empire Stage, which is on the fifth floor of the expansion, all the way to the main stage, which is in the basement on the far end. That would be a tough get. Some people can make it, some people might not make it. It's hard to say with the traffic and stuff, foot traffic. But anyways, the cool thing about it was they probably only reserved like maybe 80% or 90% of the room. So even people who didn't get the reservations could still line up, and then they were still letting people in after the reservation people got there. Or if some of the reservation people didn't show up, you had to get there early with the reservation. You still had to be there kind of early to get your seat. If once that window shut, then they started letting the standby people in. So you could still go see something standby. You're just not guaranteed. Now, the rooms I were in were quite huge, and I mean, a lot of standby people were out there. I went right in, but then the standby people, you know, there's probably hundreds that still got in after me. So now in the big rooms, though, I sat probably in the first third of the room, and then the standby people were probably in the, you know, the very, very back. But anyway, yeah, so I thought it was pretty cool because I had the ones I definitely wanted to go to, I had reservations for. And then when you go there, you just, you could do one of two things. You could either show them your ticket if it was hooked to your ticket, or mine, I just printed mine off and they just scanned the barcode and walked right in. So that was really cool. I want to tell you this too. They upgraded their metal detectors and their security. So going in was lightning fast.
That's good.
Only because before it was like a big, you know, it could be like a big old line to get in. I mean, I went through so fast. Our buddy Omar went through so fast. In the past, that backed up. Now, if you did have something but beep, they'd check your bag. But otherwise, you just walk through with your bag, and if it didn't go off, you're good. And, I mean,
so they didn't look in your bag?
No, not unless they needed to.
I wonder why they look in your bag normally, because you go through a metal detector.
I don't know. They've really made that so much better now.
Yeah, not doing a bag search is... would definitely.
So we went down. Well, I was there the first day by myself. Get what happened to Omar. He had a... I'll tell you his story real quick.
He didn't stay at your hotel, did he?
Yeah, he stayed with me.
Oh, did he stay in your room?
Yeah.
Oh, so he was involved in all the shenanigans.
Well, he didn't get there Wednesday like I did. He was going to come in Thursday at 5:30 was when his flight was supposed to be there. But he's coming from northernish California, north of LA anyway. They canceled his flight, so he gets to the airport, his flight's been canceled, and he's like, I don't know if I can even make it now or not. Well, he ends up, I don't know if he's changed airlines or not, but he changed airports.
You tell him, hey, even if you don't make it, you still owe me for half the room.
No. he had to fly to JFK instead of LaGuardia or Newark.
Was he planning, or did that get switched?
No. That was not part of the plan.
Oh, okay.
His flight got canceled.
So he switched airlines.
So to make it that day, he had to switch flights or switch airports. But get this, he was due at 5:30. He didn't get in until like 1 a.m.
Oh, really?
He got in like after midnight, got to the hotel after 1. We ended up going to bed at like 3 o'clock because he hadn't ate all day. So he had to get some food or whatever. So it was like a big... He barely made it, basically. He got screwed out of it.
How do you get, if he was, his original flight going to be there at 5:30?
5:30 p.m.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
And they got canceled, so he had to switch complete airports. So it was like a big, and you know.
Yeah, but JFK to LaGuardia shouldn't have made a big difference. It was whatever happened between there and there, but.
No, well, but now his flight, instead of taking off when it's supposed to get there at 5:30, now it takes off so much later.
Right.
And he gets in at like midnight, and he's got to. And then the Uber from like JFK to the hotel is, I want to say it's 30 minutes further away at least.
Oh yeah.
So anyway, he got there pretty late, but Yeah, we went to the show. So Thursday, I was there by myself. A couple of observations. Since they've added that one area and they got the people going up there to those panels, it seemed to like not be as bad down there in the bottom where all those rooms are, where the panel rooms are.
Oh,
seems
yeah.
to kind of like, you know, that was seemed to be better. Foot traffic seemed to be a lot smoother. I think the aisles seemed a little wider, although I think there's still just as much stuff in the dealer's room as ever. They've increased the amount of food carts in the dealer's room to where now...
Wait, food carts?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was there food in the dealer's room? Yeah, I think before they had like some Nathan's and things like that.
I didn't realize that.
Now they've got like ramen.
Like along the wall?
Yeah, along the wall in the back. Now they've got ramen, they've got burger, they got hot dogs, they got all kinds of stuff. So point being is, you know, like in San Diego, they just have those three restaurants and then, and the seating out there that kind of takes up part of the floor space.
Well, you know, you say restaurants, you're talking about counter service, but yeah.
Well,
there's like three places you can eat.
They're part of the facilities.
Right, but it's not. It's not like they got a Burger King in there.
Well, yeah, but it's.
It's like going to a Blazers game or something.
Exactly, or a concert or something.
Yeah, there's
it's got three of those kind of things.
Yeah, kind of spread out on the back wall.
Well, and remember how congested it is back there? There's nowhere to sit. Well, New York's got them all over the place around the periphery, and plus all those food trucks. So basically, there was like no problem getting food. I mean, I ate like Nathan's hot dogs a couple times. Lines were quick, so much better. I mean,
that's good.
It's really better. I didn't have to even go outside to get food. So I walked the whole show floor on that Thursday. I went to the Artist Alley briefly. I actually met Eduardo Rizzo, and he signed a book for me. I went by Kim Jung Gi's table. Unfortunately, he passed away, but people were putting flowers on his table and stuff. I took a picture of that early on when there's like a few things on it.
I saw it later.
By Saturday, it was domed and people were writing on the
tablecloth.
Yeah. I signed it.
So for anybody that listened to this, I'm sure they heard about Kim Jong-gi passing. Kim Jong-gi was on his way to New York Comic Con. I guess he was at the Paris airport.
That's what I heard.
I don't know if he started off in Paris or he was at a connecting flight from Korea or whatever. But he was at the Paris airport, and he started having chest pains, and they rushed him to the hospital, and then he died? Is that what you heard?
I don't know if he even got to the hospital before he died.
Anyway, he apparently died of a heart attack. Not very old.
Like 46, I want to say?
Yeah, I think that's what I read. I thought he was... To me, he always looked older than that, but I think it's just because he's bald. But I had no idea how old he was, really.
Yeah, I think he was only 46, but yeah. I feel like... And I've watched him draw live at San Diego one year. I think it was in 2014. I've seen him draw live a couple different times in New York. We went to the panel and saw him draw live at the panel.
Yeah.
The guy was unbelievable. I still say he might have been the most talented guy artist in a room.
No, I would argue that it's hard to quantify that.
No, I get it. It is.
But let me say this. So... There was somebody... Okay, so a big thing right now is this AI art. I don't know if you probably don't know anything about that, but people are doing this AI art. It's where they log onto this website and they put in different phrases. You can upload images, and you can basically train this AI and tell it, and it'll create images. I've messed with it. It's very quick. And someone came out like a day or two after he died and said, I've trained my AI thing to draw like Kim Jong-gi. And I looked at, and he had examples. Well, first off, this guy just got raked over the coals because, you know, this guy just died a few days before. This guy's saying, oh, I trained this machine to draw just like this guy that died, who is incredibly talented or was incredibly talented. And I looked at it and I said, if anyone thinks this looks like Kim Jong-gi, they don't understand what makes Kim Jong-gi special. Because the art, apparently he loaded a bunch of his drawings in there, and stylistically it looked like him. But the thing that made Kim Jong-gi great, and what was impressive, is he would draw these large scenes, and or small, but he would draw from an unusual viewpoint. He would draw like from a bird's eye view, and he would draw stuff in perspective, and it would be there would be stuff flying through the air that was all in the correct perspective, and the it and it was done in a way that is very unusual. You don't see a lot of artists that do that, and he would do it on the fly. Usually, I don't know if I've I know I've seen some of his pencil drawings, but typically draw in ink, like with a brush pen, and it was all in this unusual perspective that, you know, that was difficult. And this guy, his computer AI that he trained to draw like Kim Jong-gi did not do any of that. It was basically just had kind of an ink style that kind of looked like Kim Jong-gi, but it was not. It was a straight-on perspective, and you know, the if anyone's never seen him, they should look him up on YouTube and watch him draw. He's real. I think to appreciate his work, you really have to see him do it while he's doing it. It's to watch him work is to really appreciate how good he is. You can look at his drawings, but it's hard to really appreciate his talent without seeing him do it, because he does them on the fly. And he works quick, and he works accurate, and he is extremely talented. You know, again, like you said, most talented guy in the room. You know, to me, it's hard to weigh one artist over another. There are things I really like about his work. There are some things I don't like about his work. But definitely very skilled and very talented at what he did, and very impressive to watch work. And that somebody a couple days after he passed would come out and say, "Oh, I've got this machine that can replicate his artwork," and is crass, in poor taste, disrespectful, and really I think speaks to the heart of what is inherently ill-conceived about people that are praising this AI art. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that.
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, you look at, like, a comic book artist on the floor doing their thing, and they might be doing a drawing, and you see how they set up a drawing. But when I watched him draw, he didn't do that. He just, in fact, one thing that I thought was unbelievable about him would be he would draw something in one corner, then another corner, then another corner, then another corner, and then draw the thing in the center that kind of hooked them all together and made a picture.
Yeah.
It's just, or he'd start at one end and kind of come down the, he wouldn't like do these like you said, perspective lines or any kind of setup sketching out. He just did it. What he did was unbelievable. How he did it was unbelievable.
Have you ever seen anything of Jack Kirby drawn?
I don't think so.
There's not a lot of videos of Jack Kirby drawing, but there are a few floating around YouTube. And Jack Kirby drew in a different style, but Jack Kirby would do that very similar thing, except Jack Kirby would start in one corner and just work his way all around, and he didn't do any guidelines, or he would just start at one end and just finish, work to his way to the other end. It just a, kind of the similar idea.
Yeah, wow.
Not having to do any construction drawings or construction lines or anything.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, it's just a shame he died. I was actually, in 18 when I went, I bought his sketchbook, he did a sketch in it, and he actually signed my name on it for me and did a sketch in it for me. And I had every intention to buy another book from him this year. Anyway, so that was kind of a real bummer. But yeah, so that first day I walked the show floor mainly.
Do you have a couple of his sketchbooks?
Yeah, I've got a couple of them.
Yeah, they're pretty good. I don't know what years I have. I have the red one, the red hardcover one, and I have a smaller one that I bought at Books Kunikonia in Dallas. And I like the big red one better. I think his latter ones are a little bit better. I don't know how many he has out.
I think I saw every one of them, because I went to the Books Kunikonia, and then also they had a Books Kunikonia at the show.
Oh, yeah.
So between the two, I think I saw all of them. And it seems like he had a new sketchbook come out about every 2 or 3 years.
Something like
and
that.
And I want to say altogether there's about 8 of them, maybe 7.
Oh,
or 8
really?
Of them.
That's probably about right.
So I walked the whole show floor on Thursday. I happened to come across the 2000 AD booth.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not the biggest 2000 AD guy or Judge Dredd guy, but I noticed that it said tomorrow, which was the Friday, the next Friday, that Garth Ennis was going to be there doing a signing. I was like, Garth Ennis is going to... He went on the list of people going to beat the show. I didn't see his name on the list.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, you know, if I would have known that, I would have brought my Punisher that Steve Dillon signed. I could have got that signed by Garth Ennis also, but I didn't know any of this, so I was kind of scrambling. I noticed they had a few books that by Garth Ennis there, so I bought. I ended up buying a Judge Dredd book that he did a story in, and another book called, like, I think it's called like Battle Action that he did stories in, or he rewrote all the stories, but different artists illustrated the different stories, about eight stories in there, or whatever. And he was going to be signing that book on that Friday. So I got to talking to this guy. I think his name was Michael Mulcher. And this Michael Mulcher, he works for 2080, but he's a writer, and he's got this book coming out, and it's like this big book about Judge Dredd. And he was telling me all about it, and he kind of got me fired up to read some Judge Dredd. And he actually gave me this little ash can. The ash can he gave me is like a sample chapter of his new book coming out. So I thought, you know what, I'll get me a Judge Dredd. So I bought the one that Garth Ennis did a story in. And,
is it one of the 2080 numbered books?
No, they got these essential ones now. They're like magazine size. So I'll bring it to the show and show it to you. But yeah, so I thought, well, I have to come back here tomorrow. So I made my way around the show floor. At the Midtown booth, Phil Kennedy Johnson was actually there. Kind of a fan of his. He's kind of a newer guy. Kind of a fan of his now. He did that that Last God book that I brought to the show.
Okay.
And the big fantasy book that I brought to the show. You know, they had the dust jacket pulled out into a big map and all that.
Oh, yeah.
I talked about it in depth. He writes Action Comics for DC. He writes Alien for Marvel. And he writes James Bond for Dynamite. He's like one of these writer darlings that's out now. And so I was sitting there talking to him, and I know he's like in the Army marching band, and I was talking to him.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, and I was like, how did you backdoor your way into comics? Because it seems like a weird combination. You're in the Army and you're in the band. And he's like, yeah, you know, my brother is an artist and wants to make comics. And he knew how to get started, so I said, well, hey, me and you can figure this out. So he started writing stuff, and his brother was drawing it or whatever, and he kind of became the superstar, and his brother's drawing stuff, but not for like a big two company. He's drawing something here or there or whatever. But Phillips Kenny Johnson, his brother had this idea to get into comics and do art. He kind of backdoors in on writing, and now he's kind of like a writing superstar right now. But met that guy. Oh, let's see here. That might have been all for my Thursday. On Friday, like I said, Omar was there. So me and him kind of walked around the show floor, walked around Artist Alley, and I got some more signatures. I talked to, I talked to Nathan Fox.
We used to see him
in Kansas City. I asked about that, and he said, well, he doesn't live in that area anymore.
Right, yeah. Well, he teaches at somewhere in New York, I think.
Oh, does he? Yeah.
I think he teaches at the School of Visual Arts.
Oh, really? Yeah, so I talked to him. Me and Omar actually talked to him for quite a while. So I said Philip Kenny Johnson, Eduardo Rizzo. Dave Johnson was standing in his booth by himself, and I went up to just kind of see what was going on at his booth, and I was looking at his he does prints or whatever, and I was looking at some of his prints, and he goes, yeah, what are you looking at? And I go, I was trying to determine how many art styles you got. You have five or six. And he started laughing. And he goes, yeah, you know, I get bored pretty easy. So I was kind of talking to him about his, how, you know, because he's got a lot of different art styles.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of talking to him about that, which is pretty cool. I talked to Russ Braun. You know who Russ Braun is?
Mm-mm.
Artist of The Boys.
Oh, okay. I thought that was Derek Robinson.
Well, he took over after Derek Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Derek Robinson did a lot, but then Russ Braun, I think maybe he did as much or more. Of course, Garth Ennis, I went back and met him on Friday, talked to him a bit. And Jim Mafu, not the biggest Jim Mafu fan.
Oh, yeah.
But he was kind of standing there by himself, so I kind of went by his table, kind of talking to him, and told him I got a couple of his things, and we were kind of shooting the breeze.
Yeah, he did the Girl Scouts.
Yeah, but that's not what my favorite thing. He did this two-issue oversized book. I forgot the name of them, but I liked them a lot. I was talking to him about those. And then Saturday, that was kind of my Friday, I guess. Saturday, Omar kind of had his own thing. He was kind of doing a little art hustle. So I had all my panels happen to be on Saturday. So I went over to the panel side of the building, at least the new side of the building that had most of my panels. And I went to the IDW Star Trek comic book panel, where they talked about all their new stuff they're doing comic book wise, which I really love the IDW Star Trek comics. So it was a pretty cool panel. Then I went back over to the main stage across the convention. I went to the Smallville panel. I used to love Smallville when it was on. So they had this they had the Smallville reunion, which is kind of cool. Like four of the main people from Smallville was on there, which is pretty cool. Then I went back to the new area, and these weren't back to back. These were like maybe an hour in between or something. I went back to the new area of the building, and I went to the Frank Miller Presents Ronin 2 panel, which you might see this hat I've got.
Oh, yeah.
They were passing these hats out to all the... it's kind of a Frank Miller hat.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're passing these hats out to everybody, and they had everybody in the audience was pretty much wearing one of these hats. Most people, anyway. Some people refused to wear them, I guess. But and Frank Miller's there. Dan DiDio's there. Dan DiDio's moderating it. Frank Miller did the layouts and wrote it, and I think Philip Tan, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be the guy doing the finishes. And then they had a colorist up on the panel too, and they were showing showing some shots of what the art's going to look like. Had some of the shots of like Frank Miller's layout and versus Philip Tan's finished pieces or whatever. It looks pretty sharp. It's going to be in black and white, and it's kind of got a manga feel to it. More so than the original Ronin.
Or whatever. Oh, yeah.
So it looked pretty cool. Went to that panel. And then lastly, toward the end of the day, I went to the Star Trek panel, which is the Star Trek TV panel. And they had people from the various shows. And then, and it's like an hour and a half panel. It's a long panel. And in the last third of it, they had the cast of Next Generation came out, because they're all going to be on the Star Trek Picard show on season 3 or whatever, so that came out, which is pretty cool. And then that was kind of my Saturday, but then at the end of the show, Omar was still doing his art hustle, so I went down to Artist Alley just to kind of for a bit, and lo and behold, there's Paul Pope.
I saw your picture of you and Paul Pope.
Yeah, so Paul Pope, what he was doing was, so his, I guess his art rep is Stanley, is it Stanley? That doesn't sound right. I don't think it's Stanley.
Not Stan Lee.
I don't think it's Stanley. I think it's, I forgot the guy's first name. His last name's Lua. He's an art rep. The art rep's a lot of the artists there. And anyways, this guy, his art rep guy, was at his table, and Paul Pope just kind of dropped in or whatnot. And what he was doing was, this art rep guy had these cover blanks. And it had a couple Batman cover blanks. And so Paul Pope was markering in. Like one has, he did a Batman. He just markered in with, no lines, no nothing. He just markered in this Batman. And the other one's got a Batman and a Robin. And it was funny because I was sitting here watching him draw those, me and another guy. And this third guy walks up. And the guy goes to me and goes, "Is that yours?" And I'm like, so Lord, no.
Yeah, I feel like he's a guy that sells his stuff pretty pricey.
There is no way those were anybody's, because what we found out was, and what I figured out was, they didn't tell us this, but this art rep guy, what I found out later was, they had a jar on his table, and it was for this foundation, the Lua Foundation or whatever.
Okay.
And so I was like, huh. And then I was thinking, well, maybe Paul Pope's doing these covers for something or another. Well, come to find out, this guy, this art rep guy, his wife had died of colon cancer, and he started this foundation. And I guess these artists were doing art for him, and he was going to auction them off to give to this cancer research or something or other. But But yeah, you don't just walk up and pay Paul Pope $10 for a marker drawing.
No.
Or $50 for a marker drawing, or $100 for a marker drawing.
No, I imagine whatever, this a cover the, like that is probably up, I'm sure, I mean, I don't know how long he spent on it, how big it was. I mean, I know it was a cover. I don't know how much detail he put in it, but I feel like it was probably close to $1,000.
I bet.
Maybe somewhere between 500 and 1,000.
I bet probably more than 1,000 because, and I based that on this, and I mean, that's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but our buddy Omar was trying to get a Mark Brooks Wolverine that he had drew and markered, color markered.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess his wife was posting these different covers that Mark Brooks was doing in the hotel room, and Omar was inquiring, like, yeah, if that Wolverine's done, what does he want for it? And the wife was like, well, we're not going to sell it till like 3 o'clock, and there's a lot of people interested in it. So, like, I looked at it, and it's nice, and he's got, you know, he color markered it. It's not like Paul Pope's black marker.
Right,
like,
yeah.
This is color markered, like, art school type stuff, but, like, on another level, pretty much, right? And so then Omar says, yeah, you know, I think they're wanting over $1,500 for that thing. And I'm like, well.
How big was it?
It's a cover.
Oh, it was on a cover?
Yeah, it was on a cover.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, but.
I'm not a fan of the art on the cover.
Well, what would you want it on in your sketchbook?
No, you'd want it on paper. But
I mean, to me, I'm not interested in any of that. If I'm buying anything like that, I'm not going to get them to do me a sketch out of their sketchbook or on a piece of paper or on a cover. The only thing that I'm going to go buy would be, I'm going to go buy an original piece of art from a Patreon comic book. That's the only thing I'd ever entertain buying.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, that, you know what you've got. These sketch covers, they do so many of those sketch covers.
That's, yeah. Well, first off, my thought is if you're going to buy that, you'd want something bigger. I mean, at least 11 by 14.
No, that's not what they do, though. Because what they do is they get them to sign it, they get it slabbed, and they got this original art on this cover. So.
Oh, I know that's exactly what,
you know. That's what they want to do, but. To me, and then, you know, then the...
And you know what? More power to them. I mean, they can do whatever.
Well, and the artist is... At that point, the artist is getting some of the money because, you know, they're drawing it and they're getting the money that way versus just slab books they may be signing and getting a little bit of money. At least this guy's doing something, getting a lot of money. But if I'm going to go for any of that, I'm more or less going to look for a page. But, which Omar was looking at pages, too. There was... He had an art hustle going, and he actually got some decent stuff, actually. I went a completely
different way. Did he buy any pages?
No, he got illustrations from
on covers?
I think he got two blanks, and he also picked up two extra illustrations. He got, I think, four pieces altogether, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah? Anybody of note?
Oh, they're all of note, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. But they were all like, is one of them Yvonne Rice? Maybe, I don't remember. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But anyway, so those covers from Paul Pope were all going to be auctioned off for this charity or whatever.
Oh, so yeah.
So. No one's getting those. But I waited around. I asked him about the THB collected again. I asked him that back in...
What'd he say?
In 16, I asked him that, or 15 or 16, I asked him at a panel.
Never happen.
And I said, look, I asked you this question on this panel... You're not going to remember this, but it was like 5-6 years ago. You said they were going to do it. I said, what's the story? He goes, yeah. Here's the thing. He goes...
Not going to happen.
No, he didn't say that at all. He goes, he's working on Battling Boy 2. And
is he going to draw it or write
it? He's rewritten 50 pages, he said, of the Aurora West that somebody else is going to draw. And he says, he's got a deal right now in place. Those two books have got to be published before they'll publish the THB, but he swears it's all going to happen. So I said, that's good enough for me.
THB will never happen. I'll tell you why. It's too much material. It's too many different sizes. I don't think he's interested in doing it.
I mean, he announced it at a show, and he's told me again he's going to do it, so we'll see.
We'll see.
I would love to have it collected.
I would love to be wrong, by the way. And I have all that. I think I have every bit of that. There's probably something I'm missing. I have a bunch of it, though, because I went through
I think at one point me and Barry were both buying it, and I think I've got all of it. I think Barry's got all of it. I mean, legitimately,
I don't. There's so much stuff.
Well, like
I've got all the numbered stuff.
Issue 6 has got 4 pieces, right?
Yeah.
And there's two number ones.
Yeah.
And so there's like 2 number ones. There's 1 through 5.
There's like the THB circus sixes. That's huge.
There's about 3 or 4 that are really oversized.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple that are actually smaller than comic size, like shorter.
I don't think I have. I have one of those, I think.
Yeah, I think there's 1 or 2 of those. But either way, so.
Don't get me wrong. I absolutely hope it happens because that you know Paul Pope is I like that stuff that THB stuff better than some of his later stuff.
I mean, I'll buy it if it comes out, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I like Paul Pope. Battling Boy was
pretty good.
Probably my favorite thing that he's done. I like Heavy Liquid a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
I think I just like the story, and Heavy Liquid is really cool. Yeah, that's probably my favorite of his stuff, I think. I like Escapo is pretty cool. I like Escapo. But the THB would be cool to have because it's so much different stuff and so, you know.
I just think having a book the size of like one of those. Maybe not this big, but I'm going to throw this out. Like, have you seen that Tashin Nemo book? Not the really big Nemo book, but the Tashin side Nemo book, which is, it's got to be that big. I mean, something like that would, but you're right. It'd probably have to be 2 volumes because it's a lot, so much material.
Yeah, here. It needs to be this size.
A bigger than that.
No.
Yeah, bigger than that.
Bigger than, you mean size-wise bigger than this or maybe thicker than that?
Maybe taller than that. And it'd probably be thicker anyway. It'd probably be 2 of those.
I don't know how many pages all that is.
Maybe 2 of those in a slipcase like that complete Wits End. But anyway, so that was kind of a cool thing. I was actually going to leave the show, and actually Omar said, hey, come on down to the Artist Alley. I went down there, ended up running to Paul Pope, got to talk to him a couple minutes. That was pretty cool.
And he swore it's going to happen.
He swears it's happening. So we'll see. Get this, Sunday, I had a Sunday ticket, but I had no panels to do on Sunday. I had walked the show floor at this point probably all the way through twice, part of it 3 times, and I'd done everything I want to do in Artist Alley. So on Sunday, before Omar flew out and before my family flew in, Omar and I went down to the Strand and to Forbidden Planet, and I just skipped the show on Sunday. I had a ticket, but I didn't even go. I felt like everything was done.
There have been a couple times I have gone to the show in the morning, and I rarely stay on Sunday past noon just because I've got everything done, and usually my wife is there, and it's like I just want to go hang out with my wife.
Yeah, I thought at that point I felt like I bought everything I wanted to buy. Speaking of buying, probably the biggest buy show I've ever had, I picked up 46 single issues.
God.
I filled in a lot of holes with that. I picked up 32 collected editions. 32 collected editions.
How'd you get all this stuff back?
Get this. 32 collected. Out of those 32, 8 were hardcovers. Out of those 8, 4 were library editions. You know how big those library editions are?
Not off the top of my head. Well, they're the size of that book?
They're about they're about that size. They're the Dark Horse ones.
So you had to ship this stuff back.
No, hang on. Those library editions are anywhere from 5 to 6 pounds each. I got 4 of those things. So, and then I also picked up like 3 or 4 magazines. Huge buying. I mean, unbelievable amount of stuff to see and do. Actually, there's a couple of wall books I've got my eye on. And I almost bought a wall book, but in the end I decided, well, I'd kind of spent enough, and I want to kind of research. I might want to get a better deal on this wall book elsewhere, but I had a couple of wall books I had my eye on.
Did you ship the stuff back?
No, so I was super concerned about the weight because those 4 library editions collectively were probably more than 20 pounds.
Sure.
I mean, they're 5 and 6 pounds each, and there are four of them, plus the other hardcovers. There's four other hardcovers, plus, like I said, 32 collected editions altogether. But what I did was, when my wife and my son got there, they brought large enough suitcases to where I was able to put a little bit here, a little bit there, that kind of thing. I had a rolling backpack, and this rolling backpack I filled with a bunch of books. The rolling backpack might have weighed more than the luggage did. It was so heavy, and I carried it on, and I put it in the bin above. Above, it was like a bin breaker. But they don't weigh that.
Nope.
They only weigh what you check. So what I checked was all less than 50. Like, I had a 49, I think, and a 47, and something in maybe the high 30s. But the real heavy one was the rolling backpack that they didn't even.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah.
And I mean, it was full of heavy books, really heavy books. But anyway, it's got it all back. You got
32 books in your...
32 collected editions.
In your... Oh.
Well, but I put the four library editions, though. I put two in my son's bag and two in the bottom of my bag. So that's where I distributed those weights. Those were checked. The other...
Oh, I was surprised you got them on 32 books in a rolling backpack.
I've got most of them in. I had a little bit extra here and there, but most of them were in the rolling backpack. I mean, it was a large undertaking. It was one of my better packing jobs. Yeah, we took the train out and saw my aunt and uncle out in Syracuse, and we flew back from Syracuse. Had a great time. Awesome show. I was going to tell you, I was not going to ride the subway the whole time I was in New York City. And I didn't until my wife got there. But one day we were going to go down to Battery Park from our hotel. And our hotel is, like I said, on 41st Street. And so I looked at the Uber and I was like, well, how much is it going to cost an Uber to ride down to Battery Park? Well, it was going to be almost $50 one way, and it would have been 50 or more back later on in the day. So that would have been a $100 round trip. I just told my wife, I said, hey, let's just ride the subway down there. You can ride down there for like $225 each.
Right.
And you can ride back for $225 each. So for literally like about $10, we rode down there and back. Otherwise, Uber would have been $100 down there and back.
Right.
So we did that. And then at one point, me, my wife, and my son, we went to Central Park, and we Ubered over there to it. But the traffic was so bad, I was like, you know what? Let's don't Uber back. Let's just subway back. So we caught the subway there. What's that?
Columbus Circle.
Is it Columbus Circle that's by Trump Tower?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We caught the subway back there from Trump Tower area and rode all the way back to our hotel. And the cool thing about it was our hotel was like literally like a block from the block and a half from the subway thing. So that was all the Ubering. The subway I did. We Ubered a little bit. And then walked a lot, obviously. And you don't see a lot of really overweight people walking in New York City. It's a walking city, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean...
You know, ate some good food, that kind of thing. Yeah, on the subway, though, I mean, zero problems. Didn't see one altercation. Didn't see one... You hear about, some guy got stabbed in the subway.
There are no bums?
I didn't see any of that. I saw police officers down there. When we went down to the 9/11 site, there was police officers down there with machine guns.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know what they think is going to go on now. I mean, the damage is kind of done, right? But they're down there with, like, their SWAT gear machine guns down there. They've even got their baklava face mask things going.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're like that in Grand Central, too.
Are they? We didn't make it. Anyways, I had a pretty good time. It was a hell of a trip, man. I think that's anything else. I think that was kind of it. Got anything you want to...
Nope.
All right. Well, I hope I didn't bore you with my
nope.
New York...
Nope. It was cool. It was... I didn't go this year, and the idea of carrying back 32 books sounds horrible.
Not really. I mean, I got some cool stuff, man.
Well, that's cool. The
I'll tell you this, though. There was a FedEx... like two doors down from our hotel.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, I go, because I got there way before she got there. I got there on a Wednesday. She didn't get there till Sunday. And when she got there, I told her, I go, I've already bought a lot. And I go, I may have to ship some of this stuff back if this packing doesn't work out. And the funny thing was, is we have a packing scale, but we didn't take it. I told her from now on, I'm bringing that packing scale.
Hang on. When you say we have a packing scale, I know who has the packing scale. It's not your wife that bought 32 books.
You know, our hotel room, the really nice one there in Manhattan, It had a scale in the room, so I was like...
Oh, it had one in the room?
Oh, yeah, I was standing...
I've seen several hotels that have them, like in the concierge desk.
Well, our hotel in Syracuse...
Oh, you mean it had a like you could weigh yourself scale?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In the room. So I'd weigh myself, and then I'd pick up the bag and see what the difference was. I asked the people in Syracuse, I go, do you got a scale here? And they go, no. And I go, there's not one scale in the whole hotel. And they go, no. And I'm like... I go, that's funny, because the hotel just came from having one every room. Whatever. But anyways... Let's wrap this episode up right here. As always, I'm your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Yo, come back next week for another all new episode. Check out our blog at betterthefictionpodcast.blogspot.com. Hey, next week we'll actually talk about some books or something cool.
And if you enjoyed this travelogue from David Nelson, take a second and leave a review and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app.
You say that, but I do remember there was one episode... No, two, where you did Pensacola, New York, and then you did your New Orleans episode. I completely remember this.
Okay.
So, I'm just following suit, man.
I'm glad that you shared your trip with us. He didn't talk about seeing your family. He don't care about seeing his family.
Thanks for asking, Michelle. Had a great time.
He said he had a great time with his family.
Actually, when I was in Syracuse.
No, I saw you did some kind of pizza challenge. You ate a whole pizza or something.
Well, Syracuse has got a bunch of comic shops. I saw your comic on the rack at a shop.
Yeah, you sent me a picture.
But I went to either five or six comic book stores in Syracuse.
No. Talk about the pizza. What was this pizza? There was like eight pizza places. You had to eat a pizza at each one.
Well,
or something.
No. So what it was is there's this guy David Portney. He does this pizza thing where he goes and rates pizza all over New York City, all over New Jersey, and Florida, and everywhere else he goes. He eats a cheese pizza. He orders a cheese pizza.
No, but what'd you do in Syracuse?
He takes a bite of it, and that's what he does. Well, he had went to Syracuse about a month or two ago, and so I had texted Jake. And I said, hey, when we're up there, I want to go to some of these pizza places that he went to, because we were both watching the videos, and he's making comments on his videos, because he does these, like I said, he does these videos, puts them on Facebook, he writes these pizza places. And his thing is, he always gets cheese, and he always kind of compares them to New York style. Either it's New York style, or it's bar pizza, or it's whatever. He's got his own little rating system.
Or Chicago pizza or whatever.
Yeah, well, he's...
Somebody told me there's a Detroit style. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. So I said, hey, well, we're up there, we ought to go check out some of these pizza places. And Jake had already been to some of them. I don't think he'd been to all of them, but he knew where they were at. We had like eight people, I think. We had this caravan. We had like two cars. And so we systematically went... And we were legitimately going to go to all the restaurants, but after five, we tapped out. But what we were doing was...
A lot of pizza, man.
Well, what we were doing, we're just ordering a slice. Because up there, you can just get a slice.
That is one thing that I wish they had here, was where you could get a... There's not very many places around here you can buy a slice.
And it wasn't like it was just lunchtime. It was like all those places have a slice whenever.
All the time.
So we went and... The first one we went to was really good. The three in the middle were not so good. In fact, one of them was just one step up above a frozen pizza. The last place we went was really, really good. And we were all given like numerical scores like 7.9 or 5.0 or whatever. And then one of my cousin's daughters was like doing this little tally sheet of everybody's scores. And at the end she came up with like, the last restaurant won or whatever. But we were all kind of, and we took a photo in front of all the restaurants and, did that kind of thing. So, it was kind of fun. We did a little, not a bar crawl, but a little pizza crawl.
What would you call it? A parlor crawl.
Yeah, and we did that. That was like lunch, although we spent a lot of time driving to all these restaurants and getting a slice. And then later on for dinner, we went to this like ramen noodle joint that was unbelievable. It was really, really solid. But yeah, we had a good time in Syracuse. Like
that's cool.
Hit like five, six comic book stores. Two of the shops up there are really good, and the other ones are just kind of so-so. You can take them or leave them, but yeah. Anyway, had a good time.
That's cool, man.
Yep. So that'll do it with this episode. Come back next week for another all-in episode. See ya later.